Welcome to This Is Money podcast. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me and editor Simon Lambert today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And coming up, the cost of living is rising, wages are too. But are we at risk of stagflation? And it's okay to ask, what the heck is stagflation? We also talk supply chain problems and staff shortages. Can we expect higher prices in the shops and more spicy grilled chicken shortages? And is Britain set for a hiring boom? It's not just stores, though, that are suffering. Soaring costs and tradesmen shortages are leaving families doing home improvements themselves or stuck with half-finished renovations. And we go inside the pocket-sized houses aimed at first-time buyers in London. We left the cat at home as there wasn't enough room to swing it. Don't forget you stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, the cost of living jumped by the largest amount on record last month, with the rise in price being blamed on pandemic chaos, aka transport, petrol, and some food stuff in there as well, which we'll get into. Inflation rose from 2% in July to 3.2% in August. So, could it run out of control and might finally the Bank of England raise interest rates and therefore we can play our game again of guess the interest rate rises? Simon, what's going on? Why is inflation up?
Well, it should be noted that this is the biggest jump in inflation between month to month that has been seen for a considerable amount of time. In fact, it's the biggest one on record, you know, so that's i.e. a considerable amount of time. But this biggest spike since 1997, which was the last time we had one that was near enough to this, has been issued with a note of caution by the ONS that said we are comparing to a strange time a year ago. So if you look at the inflation bulletin, it basically says that the largest contribution to inflation was base effect. What does that mean? Not everybody's gone out and bought some massive speakers. It means that we're comparing to a time a year ago when prices were depressed. They were artificially depressed in some places by Eat Out to Help Out. I love the way that our statistics are getting crazily tweaked. We talked about wages, haven't we? By coronavirus measures. And it's the sort of like, you'd think that somehow this stuff would be ironed out, wouldn't you? That if the Chancellor decides to give people a discount on their meals, that that would be kind of ironed out the figures. But we don't iron this stuff out the figures. Okay, so food and drink and restaurants was a big contribution. Discounted restaurant and cafe prices. But also food in the supermarkets, transport, housing and household services, recreation and culture. All of these are pushing upwards. And it's because we're comparing to, you know, pandemic era stuff. But actually, you know, life had got to a sort of fairly normal period last August time, hadn't it? You know, there was that sort of summer window of opportunity before things started to tighten up. I think it was about this time last year that we started getting things like the rule of six. But obviously, you know, prices were still slightly depressed from the initial lockdown, and now things are bouncing back. But the concern is actually not to do with that stuff where you go, oh, well, it was just the pandemic. You know, it was just us coming out of lockdown. It was just the sort of summer 2020 stuff. The concern is to do with things like the cost of building materials, the cost of transport in terms of transporting goods and stuff like that. We're hearing lots of stuff about the supply chain crunch, the shortage of things coming in that are then driving up prices, and the shortage of people to actually move that stuff around the country that is then driving up prices, and the concern that that's going to feed through into even more inflation and that you end up in an inflationary spiral, which is the thing that you don't want. What you want is for this to be transitory, as the central banks maintain it is, not to be something that sticks around and gets worse and feeds into people's expectations. And then the problem with inflation is the more you think there's going to be inflation, the more inflation there is. And then it's quite difficult to get a handle on.
Well, we'll get more into those sort of supply chain issues shortly in more detail. But also, Lee, before I get into how this impacts on our finances, Simon, if you do strip out things like the Eat Out to Help Out, if someone had really sort of had a proper good old go at this, not saying that they haven't had a proper good old go at this, but had it been more reflective of reality, what sort of figure would we be looking at?
That's a good question, and one that I don't know the actual answer to.
Right.
However, I believe that we would be looking at maybe around kind of above, slightly above target inflation, is okay. My understanding.
And with that in mind, therefore, does that change the picture of the whole discussion around this? Any concerns that people might have, etc.?
No, because inflation is expected to continue to rise. So this is the issue, is this came in ahead of expectations. And bear in mind that all of those expectations are aware of the factors that we're talking about. And this is ahead of expectations. Bank of England says it thinks inflation is probably going to hit 4%, but then it's going to go down. And every time that inflation comes in above expectations and is believed to be continuing to rising, you will get more and more concerns about inflation, because it's we thought it was going to be high, but actually, it's higher and it's going to keep going higher still. That's where the worries come from.
Lee, what does it mean for our personal finances? Savings rates, I imagine, do any actually beat inflation?
No, well, that's the thing now. I mean, if you think about it, between now and the end of the year, if inflation continues to keep riding high, it just becomes more and more difficult for the billions of pounds that are in run-of-the-mill savings accounts, current accounts, to keep anywhere near the rate of inflation. In fact, the highest rates you can get are on five-year fixed accounts, and you can't really get beyond 1.8% on that, and that's a big gap between that and inflation. And then over 1 year, you're talking about 1.5%, and on an easy access, best buy rates here as well, 0.65%. I mean, that is a huge erosion of real spending power over the years, depending on where inflation sits, but it doesn't look like that this sort of problem is going to go away anytime soon. I feel like you can kind of, this bite, you can kind of feel a bit more than usual. And what I mean by that is just the cost of living does feel like it is nudging higher monthly. And, even just the cost to fill up a tank of petrol at the moment, I noticed the local garage to me here is, I think, 140 a litre now for unleaded. That's high. That's incredibly high, just at the time when more people were hitting the roads. And we've got energy bills rising, and I read a story this week saying that energy bills are likely to continue to keep rising. And there's all sorts of pressures, I think, on household finances that are going to be felt quite keenly over the next sort of year to 18 months. I feel like this is the bite that's coming after the pandemic. But it's really hard to completely predict what's going to happen. And I know I can predict one thing, and that will be that the weekend newspapers will be full of ways to beat inflation or keep your finances away, inflation proof them, basically. That classic inflation proof your finances and how to align your
inflation proof your finances, Lee?
Well, that it's always that the favorite is gold. That will always come up top on the old on the old weekend paper front. But I mean, again, and we say this quite a lot in this podcast, it is about re-evaluating your own finances and potentially where you've got your investments held, where you've got your savings, how balanced your portfolio is. All of those kind of things need to be sort of looked at a time when inflation, who knows where it goes next? I mean, that's a huge spike over the last month. Could there be another huge spike between now and next month? Well, I wouldn't bet against it. The likelihood is it won't, but it could notch 4% between now and Christmas, and that's a high rate of inflation, and that will be felt across the country by pretty much all households, wealthy households, poor households, and everyone in between.
It's interesting, Simon, what Lee was saying there about people feeling that. I mean, I'm in Spain at the moment. Energy prices have just gone up 4 times. Everyone's running around turning off the lights everywhere. But we are sort of noticing that, aren't we?
We are noticing that. And we've spoken about this on the podcast before. And I said that it's going to start crimping people's sort of financial feelings kind of thing. I think people have... The economy has benefited and been more buoyant than people thought, because people have been feeling a bit flush from their lockdown savings. And now I think they're going to be feeling a bit less flush. And you have the scenario where people are also now going back to the office, those office workers who've been working from home. And that's a lot of people. And the trains are noticeably busier. I'm quite disappointed. You know, I was quite enjoying getting the train in the morning and having four seats to myself or on trains that were normally standing room early. I'm quite grumpy now. There's like sometimes you have to sit next to someone. That is the thing that's really going to hit people in the pocket, because it's extortionately expensive, as we know. And people are suddenly going to start finding that instead of saving money and seeing their bank balances go up, they're suddenly finding that they're down at the end of the month, because even if they're only going in maybe two or three times a week, that could be 60 or 90 pounds, yes, maybe 60 or 100 pounds going out of their bank account every single week that hasn't been going out of it. And that's 400 pounds a month. So all of a sudden they're going to feel that at the same time as they're feeling the price of stuff going up. And if you're planning on doing some big spending, a big project, for example, building work, hugely expensive, can't get supplies, prices going through the roof, people are being told, just don't even bother. Just don't do it. Just pause. You know, architects and builders are saying, look, just leave. If you don't have to do it now, leave it until next year. Used cars as well. Wow. I mean, I tell you one unconventional asset for beating inflation this year, used cars. If you'd got a load of used cars in January, you'd be laughing. In fact, actually, funnily enough, I'm looking at this amazing chart in the ONS inflation release, which shows the price of used cars going up like a hockey stick curve. And it sort of dates, it takes them back to 100 for a number of different years from January. And there's a couple of years where they do go up by a fair amount. So 2020, they did go up by a fair amount as well. 2018, they went up by a couple of percent. In other years, they kind of fell or whatever. But this year, the price of used cars did go down from January to about May time. And then it's a line that just nearly goes straight up in the air. It's like looking at a Bitcoin chart. You know, so, and those prices have grown 18.4% between April and August. I mean, that's astonishing, really. I mean, fortunately, most of us don't buy used cars on a monthly basis, so it's not impacting people's finances too much. But all of these things do feed into this sense for people that, ooh, hang on a minute, where's all my money going? Yeah. This is getting a bit expensive. But will we see a wage price spiral? That's the economic textbook one, where people suddenly start demanding higher wages. You have to have the pricing power with your employer in order to demand those higher wages. But we are seeing story after story after story of sectors of the economy where people do have just that at the moment.
Mm-hmm. We'll get more onto that shortly. But I want to ask you the favourite game that we always used to play, the Bank of England, will they raise interest rates? Bearing in mind, we've got tax rises as well to swallow at the moment. Well, not at the moment. Obviously, they come in a little bit later on next year. But oof, grim doom, Simon. Will they raise interest rates?
Not next Thursday, which is their next meeting. No, I definitely don't think they'll do it next Thursday. But I think maybe early next year they might do. Maybe springtime next year, perhaps. I mean, the thing is what we were just talking about, where inflation actually starts to crimp people's spending and behaviour, and people adjust their behaviour, and therefore that actually starts to then drag inflation down because people aren't as spendy. And being spendy is an inflationary driver, as well as all the other factors that come into play. You could find, or demand side inflation, as it's known in economics textbooks, not being a bit spendy, you might find that actually inflation does start to ebb away and it is transitory, and the supply side issues sort themselves out as the central banks expect. But if we're still having this conversation come January or February time, then yeah, I think maybe interest rates could go up in March. But I mean, they're going up from literally being practically nothing. So I mean, I'm pretty sure the economy could survive a nudge up to 0.25%.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Simon, I do want to ask you before we move on to things like supply shortages, a rather gloomy report. Now for the hard part. The clues in the title there. Capital Economics saying that data from the US to China suggests we might be facing the world a dangerous bout of stagflation. But first, what is stagflation, Simon?
Stagflation. Okay, stag
and hen do's kind of thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. We talk about this every so often. Stagflation is the scenario where you get low economic growth that hits jobs and wages, but also rising prices. So basically, it's the economy slows, you've got low growth, but you've also got inflation. Normally, inflation goes with high growth and low inflation goes with low growth. But there's the fear that you get stuck in this awkward place where growth is rubbish and inflation is high. It's a kind of 1970s vibe of stuff. I love a stagflation story, and so do the readers. They love a stagflation story, and it rears its head every so often. We had concerns about stagflation, you know, after the financial crisis and all these kinds of things. The expectation amongst central banks has been that they can basically get away with all the quantitative easing and money printing and cash that's been bounced around and low interest rates, because we got away with it last time and we didn't see that inflationary spike that people expected. The concern is that this time around we won't get away with it, because actually it's quite a lot of it is involved directly handing money to people and rather than just sort of pushing it into the financial system. I don't think that we will see stagflation, because I think that we will see growth as well. The thing that's actually holding back growth at the moment, ironically, is actually some of this supply chain issues that's then causing the inflation as well. So there is a bit of a ugly cocktail going on there. But I think that you get those supply chain issues sorted out. People do have a bit more money. People's wages are going up, which, let's face it, is a good thing after many, many years of low wage growth. I think we are going to see growth, and I think we're probably going to see a couple of good years. It's funny, isn't it? We started the year talking about the roaring 20s and how we were going to see this great economic decade, and we're 3 months from the end of it and we've got the stagflation stories rearing their head. I'd err more on the glass half full side than the glass half empty.
So 20s or 70s, what are we going for?
Look, I'd much prefer the roaring 20s to the to the brown 70s, or whatever you call them, the corduroy 70s.
I do like some bell bottoms. Anyway, right, we're going to delve more into this supply chain issue, because mainly what we're reading is Twitter rants about people who can't get hold of things like their favourite chicken pasty bakes. But I would like to go a little bit more deeper than Twitter rants. What is causing it, and how are companies responding? And what's the solution, which Simon was talking about there? Lee, explain to us more than just a Nando's outrage.
Well, it's been a bit of a perfect storm, George, and I feel like it's been a bit of a perfect storm that we've been warning about potentially for about the last year or so, when we were talking about problems at ports across Britain getting goods in. And we've spoken about this a couple of times on the podcast, that the cost of a container coming in is shooting through the roof, or costs associated with that. I mean, as far as I'm aware, it's gone up fivefold since the start of the year to get a container shipped in here. Then we've got issues such as a shortage of lorry drivers, and we realise how crucial, all of a sudden we've woken up and realised how crucial lorry drivers are to the country, and you know how they keep everything moving, ticking along. So all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, lorry drivers are important, maybe we should, you know, treat them a bit better, and long overdue, I should add. And there's a huge driver shortage. You know, we've been hearing about this for quite a number of months. You know, there's a few reasons for that. You could argue that Brexit has taken some of the drivers potentially out of the kind of loop, as it were. There's been a backlog of getting licenses issued for HGV drivers. You know, it's a little bit more complicated to get a lorry license, as it should be, because you know you're driving a huge truck that can do some serious damage if you don't know what you're doing. And being an HGV driver hasn't exactly been the most attractive, glamorous profession for you know, potentially people coming out of school, for example. You know, it could be long hours, it could be night hours, a lot of time sitting down, driving around, and quite a thankless job. Now what we're seeing is, I'll give you one example, a business I know, a small local business, has got a couple of HGV drivers. They've turned around and said, give us a £10,000 pay increase, because you know, there's jobs everywhere. There's sign-up bonuses to go to certain companies. You know, you need to treat us better. You need to pay us more. because otherwise we're off and they're over a barrel, because then to replace them becomes a very difficult job. So we've got all of that kind of stuff going on. Then we've got the issue of things like materials and where they're coming from. You know, the whole used car thing is for the fact that people are struggling to buy new cars because of this chip shortage, for example. A lot of orders for chips have gone into things like laptops, where there's been a huge surge in that. Manufacturers, where they stopped last year, kind of paused these chip orders, and now they're scrambling. And now a lot of manufacturers are saying, if you order a new car today, you're not going to get it for a year. I mean, that's quite incredible. All of these little things are happening. And then we've got things, I don't think it's been that keenly felt in supermarkets as has been reported. I mean, forgive me if I'm...
Yeah, I'm listening from Spain and people go, oh, there's shortages. And I'm thinking, are we back to the bad old days of waiting for toilet paper and stuff for weeks?
It's been very rare for me to go in a supermarket in the last few weeks, months, and not pick up what I've needed. There's been some emptier shelves, and actually a local Tesco Express store around here and the BP garage, which is part of M&S, I have overheard some staff saying, you know, our stock room is the clearest we've ever seen it. Mm. And we're getting lorries in, you know, perhaps once a week rather than twice a week. That's the kind of like murmurs that I heard, you know, there. So, you know, all of that stuff then does start to add up over time. And again, I hate to talk about Christmas in September, but then you've got leading up to Christmas, you know, people tend to start buying more stuff, hoarding more stuff, you know, and it's all of that kind of thing. And it just feels like there's a whole perfect storm of how this is kind of happening. And, you know, there is a shortage of certain things, if depending on what it is that you're after. And we've had a raft of companies come out, you know, stating the same, basically, you know, supply chain and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we had the canal blocked, and that had a big impact on, you know, freight around the world. And it's just been a real crazy time. And I suspect there's a lot of business owners out there that are struggling, you know, rising costs, struggling to get the products that they need, rising cost of raw materials, more expensive staff. And at the end of the day, comes down to the end consumer that buys the product, because you either can't buy the product because it's not there and it hasn't been made, or you're being charged more for the product because of what's going on behind the scenes, i.e. the cost of materials, the cost of it, you know, potentially being shipped, and the cost of staff. And all of those things at the moment feel like they're rising quite rapidly.
I mean, the furniture seller Made.com are warning this could go on into 2022. What sort of impact would that have, Lee, do you reckon?
Well, that's what, again, I'll go back to the local business around here that I, you know, a friend works at. It's kind of like they're hearing the same kind of stuff, you know, as in terms of freight, in terms of materials, and all the backlogs that seem to be going on. And it's, you could be a small business or you could be a big business like Made.com, saying that, you know, this is going to have massive impact. And yeah, and at the end of the day, I mean, Made.com is predicting its revenues to drop, will surge by 65%. But it kind of, how do you keep up with demand? You know, if you keep offering the products that people want and products that people want to keep on buying, but then you can't make them quickly enough or fulfill orders, it starts to have a dent on, you know, sort of customer satisfaction. And it's very hard to explain to someone. You know, we're a country where if you've got the money, or if you want to put it on credit and you want to go and get something, you can near enough get it straight away, pretty much. You know, we're very used to that. You know, you need a new coffee table, I could go and get one within 2 mile radius from here from about 20 different shops. But when you start narrowing people's choice, that's when people start to get a little bit spooked, I would say. And Made.com, you know, have come out here, and, you know, they're a big company. They're in a number of different countries. And it's just, I guess, those worries about the supply chain and things like where's the wood coming from? And then, you know, is that supply chain still working? Or, you know, does it get pulled from another outbreak of coronavirus, for example? Or, you know, did the staff get attracted to go and work somewhere else, and then they're having staff shortages? And all of these things are bubbling away at a whole manner of different companies.
Yeah, we got a load of companies reporting this, didn't we, Simon? I mean, Ocado, I mean, let's throw in the staff shortages that everybody's talking about. Ocado, they're planning to pay their drivers more. Wagamama Owners Restaurant Group, although they've, you know, done pretty well post-pandemic, share price down 2.8%, worried about all of these issues as well. You know, John Lewis, rather like this one, in terms of trying to attract staff. Lee there mentioned Christmas, thanks Lee, offering bacon and eggs to try and lure staff in, which there's some research out from Manpower Group saying that we could be set for a hiring boom. A record number of firms plan to take on more staff before the end of the year, which makes sense given everything you guys have said. Are these good jobs? Are these, you know, going to help with furlough, etc.? We'll get into that in a minute. But Simon, lots of warnings around in lots of different areas.
Yes, it's not just delivery drivers and truck drivers. Hospitality, big issue. Staff shortage, can't get people. There's problems all across different industries. So, for example, nurseries and childcare, they've got issues as well. So my daughter's breakfast club, which is run by an outside company to the school, has been cancelled until half term because they can't get staff to run it. I mean, there's an obvious impact from that, because that's the difference between the children being dropped off at 8 o'clock in the morning and nearly 9 o'clock in the morning, which, you know, has an impact on working parents. Care homes are already struggling for staff as it stands, you know, have been for many years, but they're struggling. Restaurants, cafes, things like that. I've got a friend who, you know, runs a fish and chip shop. He's struggling to get people. Now, the thing is a lot of these jobs that what joins the dots together are that they're some of the lower paid jobs, hospitality, retail, you know, driving, things like that. And maybe people being paid more money, the money that they need to live on, and being treated a bit better by their employer, whether that means better shift patterns, a few more perks at work, some bacon and eggs and all that kind of stuff, a free breakfast, a free lunch or whatever, maybe that's a good thing. I mean, maybe it's good to see a little bit of the power wrestled back from corporations towards the workers. You know, you don't have to be, you know, standing there doing your Citizen Smith power to the people thing to think that maybe it's a good thing for people to be treated a bit better and paid a bit more money. The problem is if they're paid more money and then the stuff that they have to buy with that money goes up by more than the amount that they're getting paid and they actually end up losing out. We have wanted an economy where people get paid more and people get treated better for quite some time. It's whether you can navigate your way through the tricky path of all those other things, you know, inflation, higher taxes, higher spending and everything else.
I was going to ask that. I mean, I saw a headline the other day when we got the vacancy figures out. There are 1,034,000 in June and August. So obviously coming off furlough, this would be, you'd think, great news. But the headline said, but they're the wrong jobs. What do you mean by that?
The wrong jobs for the wrong people, for the people. It is, it's the people who are available to work, because unemployment is still higher than it was before the pandemic. But the people who are available to work and unemployed aren't the people who fit the jobs. But, you know, you can train people to do a job. The problem is with the HGV thing that they're talking about, for example, is it takes too long to train to be an HGV driver. In a perfect economic situation, what would happen is you have a shortage or a scarcity of workers in one place, and then the workers just shift from another place to do that, and they get swiftly. But you have the whole issue of training and qualifications and stuff like that. I think what we're going to see and what we are seeing is a big shake-up of the economy after the pandemic, which was a hopefully once-in-a-lifetime event, and we're watching everything settle down. We've talked about this with the working from home thing, you know, that sort of initial everybody's going to work from home, it's a total work from home revolution at the start of the pandemic. That was way too far one way, but I think maybe the whole everybody's just going to go straight back to the office and it's going to be exactly the same as it was before is way too far back the other way. And what's going to happen is everything's going to settle in the middle, and some companies will say, nope, sorry, we want everybody in the office. Yeah. And some of those people will go back, and some of them will go, well, no, actually, I don't want to do that, and I'm going to go work for a company that isn't going to make me do that. And on the flip side, some companies will be like, that's it, you're working from home forever, because it's cheaper for us, we're saving money. And some of their workers will go, do you know what, actually, I don't like working from home all the time. I'd like to spend some time in the office, and they'll go find a new job. And it will all settle down. But it's going to be a bit of a tumultuous period in the middle. And I think that's what we're seeing with some of this inflation, supply chain crunch, staff shortages stuff that's going on as well. You're seeing that kind of tumultuous thing in the middle, and then it will settle down. But it will settle down with things looking slightly different to how they did before.
I found myself getting reflective now. I found myself dreaming of going back to the office. I never thought this would happen. You dream, don't you? Work from home. Wouldn't that be amazing? I'll be honest with you. I'm out. I'm done. I'm sick of it. Like, a couple of days a week, absolutely fine. But I'm clawing at the walls trying to get back. As soon as I get back on British soil, I'm going back into the office. I just think I feel so isolated. And all of these arguments about, playing off your colleagues and whatnot, it's true. And just feeling like part of something. Yeah, I want to go back.
I met up with a couple of friends last night. One of them hasn't been into the office since the start of the pandemic. So that's 18 months ago, right? Mm-hmm. And he's got a nice house in the countryside and everything like that. So he's been fairly happy with this. He's like, no, this is great for me. Mm. Working from home forever. And then he was like, yeah, I'm just bored of the same four walls. So he went into London yesterday for work, but he didn't go into the office.
Oh.
He just went out for lunch with someone.
Well, and then he went
and did some work from a Starbucks. I was like, that is absolutely priceless. Your first day back after 18
months. You don't actually go back.
Working from home, you don't bother to go into the office.
So as I said, Simon, slowly, give him time. No, I want to speak to people in real life. Anyway, I want to also talk about, Lee, you did touch on it there, the supply issues and the staff shortages, not only affecting businesses, but affecting people as well. And that's, the increased costs, tradesmen shortages, all those sorts of things. And there's an article on your website saying it's leaving families faced with the prospect of doing home improvements themselves or be stuck with half-finished renovations. The advice is don't get started, but if you've already started, you're a bit stuffed, aren't you?
Don't do home improvements yourself is the real takeaway from anything in life is definitely don't do home improvements yourself.
Can you get off YouTube? No?
Yeah, unless you're really confident and it's not huge, dangerous jobs. But no, on a serious side, I feel like we've spoken about this a few times in the last year. And I think a lot of it goes back, we could see how this was unfolding where people were obviously, people fortunate enough to have kept their jobs were saving up money and building up a pot of money. And we saw that with this whole accidental savers thing. Then a big expenditure for a lot of people were holidays. Well, holidays were kind of off the cards. So that's even more money saved. And then I think what a lot of people have thought is either let's do a big home renovation project, either an extension or, perhaps buying a new place and then, it's a bit of a wreck and doing it up and having grand visions of going through with all that and budgeting and doing it all. But we saw that launch, for example, of the Green Homes Grant last year. It was, a real kind of like last minute decision, I think, by the government to say, right, here's a pot of cash that people can kind of use to retrospectively then claim back when they've had these home improvements done. So, things to make your home greener. The big problem with that was that there was a huge shortage of tradespeople to undertake the work. And then you've got things like there's a lot of new builds going up. That sucks up a lot of tradespeople that are going off doing specialist jobs, whether it's, plumbing, whether it's, being a roofer, scaffolder, whatever it is, all of these things take time and take people and take experienced quality builders to do the work. And they have got huge backlogs of people getting in touch. And if you're a good builder and you've been recommended or you're on Check a Trade or whatever, equivalent, and you've got a good reviews and good ratings, you are just so sought after at the moment. It is unbelievable. So we've got a story on the website and they budgeted, I think, £100,000 to do the work on this bungalow that they bought. In the end, it's cost them £170,000 and it ran months over. The builder said it would take 3 months, but again, touching on what I was speaking about earlier, getting your hands on materials isn't the easiest thing at the moment, depending on what the work is and what the job is. And I think you've got to be quite brave at the moment to be thinking about doing these renovations. And I guess the biggest advice would be, A, have a budget. B, realise you're probably not going to stick to it, and make sure that you've got the extra, you know, 25% or whatever it might be that could run over. Manage expectations in terms of, you know, tradespeople do have this habit sometimes, I'm not saying all, but of perhaps stretching themselves a bit thin, maybe taking on a couple of different projects at the same time, which I could totally understand because there's a lot of projects to go around at the moment. So I can totally see why that, you know, could be happening. And to realise that tradespeople don't have full control over things like raw materials. If the cost of raw materials goes up, whatever it may be, you know, for example, a big classic one at the moment is like wooden beams, for example. I've heard that wooden beams have become expensive. And the tradesperson might have quoted you something originally, but they then can't, you know, completely guarantee that if those raw materials start getting more expensive, or between giving you the quote, and especially if it's been a few months in between, to then starting the project. So it's very difficult, and I can see why people are doing it, and why more people have been tempted into doing these big projects. But, you know, as always, it's treat these things with a huge amount of caution.
Yes, indeed. Know thy limits, and treat the tradespeople with some respect. Simon?
Well, don't forget, the other thing feeding into this, of course, is that we've had an absolute ton of people moving home. And when people move home, they tend to do refurbishments. Lots of people buy houses that they plan to extend or things like that. And you've had people stuck at home, so they're therefore planning extensions and stuff like that. But I mean, yeah, a lot of people are being told by architects and builders themselves, don't do it now. Just wait until next year. Let it settle down. And so unless you really, really need to do it, people are just being told, just wait, you know.
This is going to do nothing for the shortage, though, of tradespeople going forward, because there's going to be a lot of tradespeople who need to rectify some pretty shoddy renovation works that people are doing themselves. But anyway, sticking with the home theme, two ways to make homes more affordable for first-time buyers, probably more than two, but, you know, build more and smaller. I didn't say they were ideal, but our Helen has been taking a look around some... I feel like I'm teeing her up here to go, hi, I'm here looking around. I'm not, sorry. But Helen Crane has been looking around some pocket-sized pads from house builder Barrett Homes. I have to be honest with you, Lee. I'm looking at the photos and they don't actually look that much smaller than what you'd normally be looking at when you're looking on, I don't know, Rightmove or whatever for new build, new homes for first-time buyers. How small are these little pequeño casas?
That's the power of photography right there, Georgie. I think if you stepped in and realized that it's 370 square foot and actually how small 370 square foot might be, having if you're living there, if you're working from home, climbing up the walls, well, you might be climbing up the walls in a place this small, I would imagine. But look, at the end of the day, you know, London is still a sought after place to buy homes. You know, we've had the whole pandemic kind of chat about people moving out of the city into more rural life. But I think that tends to be more kind of families or, you know, not particularly sort of younger people that still like to have that kind of balance of like basically being in one of the best cities in the world and having it on your doorstep. And then it takes a lot to go move somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And some people realise actually that wasn't for them. But Helen, when I had a look at these homes, they're in Harrow. It's a prototype home. It is for sale, but it's a prototype home, as in there are sort of, there could be moves to make more of these. And priced at £290,000. And it's hard because it could be the answer to get certain buyers, first-time buyers, onto the ladder, right, and owning a home. And actually, to be quite frank, a lot of people, when they rent in somewhere like London, probably don't rent anywhere much bigger than that, or they house share with people that they don't really particularly want to live with. And then if you divide the square foot of how many people are in that home, you know, it's probably not much more than this. So I kind of completely get the concept. It's also a concept that, you know, I think you would find in other countries. I think there's quite a lot of countries that have these kind of smaller builds. I remember once going to the IKEA factory in Sweden, and they had all of the brochures for different countries. So every single country has a different brochure. And some of the countries, the rooms were made much smaller in the brochure to show the furniture, because they used the average square footage of each, you know, country and market. And I remember being quite blown away by some, I think Japan, for example, like, you know, the homes were so much smaller, but then they just do clever things with the space. And I guess this is what the argument would be for something like this, you know, space is at a premium in somewhere like London. We may be seeing things like office blocks and whatnot, maybe not being used as offices anymore, and perhaps, you know, being converted into small flats like this. And I'm not going to sit here and poo-poo this and say this is a tiny flat and you shouldn't buy it and you shouldn't live there and I can't believe that what they're up to. I think it's more of a case of this could be a perfect starter home for a few years to, you know, live on the outskirts of London at a relatively affordable price compared to what else is on offer across the capital. And I bet your bottom dollar that you'd live in it for a few years and find it relatively easy to sell, I'd imagine. You know, people were looking for bolt holes and all that kind of stuff as well. So I get the concept. Will it get rolled out more widely spread? Well, quite possibly.
Simon, your views?
Well, I agree with Lee that a well-designed small home can be worth a more bigger home that's badly designed. So say, for example, you had, you know, this is 37 square meters, right? If it's been really well designed and everything's got a place and it's like, you know, got some cunning stuff going on and they've really thought about how people will live in it and stuff like that and how it would work for people, then you could easily find it as spacious to live in as maybe a 50 square meter flat. You definitely won't find it as spacious to live in as the average sized home, which is three times as big as it. And you might have to, if you've got someone else living in there with you, you might have to do a bit of dancing around them kind of thing. But I mean, the Japanese thing is a great example of, you know, they are the absolute masters at the kind of small space living kind of thing. It's not for everyone. If it's done well, it might work well. It's a hell of a lot of money though, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
For 37 square meter flat in Harrow.
I mean,
it's not in central London. It's in Harrow, you know, nearly starts at 290 grand.
That's...
Ouch.
Yeah. What was Helen's reaction when she came back? You know, when she comes back into the office and goes, yeah, it was great. Or yeah, it was rubbish. Or what was her immediate reaction?
I think she was reasonably impressed.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I mean,
ignoring the price tag,
but you can't get over the fact that it is really small and it's lots of money, and that is the thing. However, kind of impressed you are, but you know, you want to live in London or Harrow, not quite London, then that's the price tag, isn't it, for a new build? I mean, I would say that what you could, the flip side of this is that, bear in mind, new build properties do tend to be premium products.
Yeah, right.
They are sold for more money than homes are sold on the secondhand market. There is a strong possibility that you could go find yourself somewhere of a similar size or slightly bigger for considerably less money. And then what you need is some clever person to fit it out for you. You just might struggle to find one of them at the moment because of the stuff that we were talking about. But if you were a talented joiner or you know, a good carpenter, then maybe you could knock one of these up yourself for less.
You got the time? You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. If you have any comments or questions for the team, anything you'd like them to look into, Simon?
You can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk or you can tweet us at thisismoney or come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all podcasts past and join in the debate in reader comments.
Marvellous. And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us. Boom!
Cool.
Marvellous stuff.
I think you always think you should leave the boom in at the end, Georgie.
Do you think so? I mean, I could start doing it, shouldn't I?
It could be your signature.